Hello, welcome to episode 10 of the Cosmetic Course podcast. This is Adrian Richards, and today we're going to be talking to Ron Myers again about practice management. In this episode, Ron's going to be talking to us a little bit about how he feels you should price your Botox treatments, and he's going to give us an insight into his research across the country, the average cost of Botox and filler treatments. We're going to be talking a little bit about offers, whether you should do them or not, and also words of caution about using Botox, which is not from any of the major pharmacies or direct from the manufacturers, because as Ron's going to be explaining, there have been some concerns with that. So I'll pass straight over to Ron for the interview. So I'm here again with Ron Myers of the Consulting Room, and today we're going to talk a little bit about pricing of your Botox and dermal fillers treatment. So thanks very much for joining us today, Ron.
Well, thank you, Adrian.
I know you've got some sort of thoughts about how practitioners should price their Botox treatments. Can you share those with us?
Yes, I mean, pricing is, I think, a really, really important issue that that you need to pay attention to when you're putting together your business model. And especially in an environment where overall, over the last probably 16 years since Botox was launched, there hasn't been, I don't think, an increase in the average price, say, for one area, for a glabella line. I think back in 94, I can remember it's around £200. And some of the studies that we've done recently within the consulting room doing price surveys have shown that it's still around that price. So in essence, we've had price deflation, but all other costs of running a business have increased over that period. So I think it's important to look and say, how do I maximize my margins in an environment where there is price deflation? I don't know whether that's something you've, looked at yourself as well with your business and looked at what's happened from a trend perspective and a stance that you take within your business.
Yeah, so I mean, I've heard stories about, so there's a well-known professor in London who reputedly used to charge £1,200 for three-area Botox. Is that true?
Well, I think there are one or two people, certainly, who work in the very, very premium parts of the market. And they developed, whether it was perception or reality, an aura of the fact that they're the best. They give the best results, best service, most exclusive service. Some of them tend to operate probably more in the higher net worth circles, where money certainly, or the price of a treatment certainly, is not a consideration. What people are looking for is the best.
Yes.
And of course, the issue is how do you work out who's better than another person at delivering botulinum toxin injections?
Yeah, so the most expensive people aren't necessarily the best, are they?
Well, this is it. And so what we're looking at here is perception probably versus reality, but perception sells. And it's a little bit like, I guess, if you think of Stella Artois and how they've marketed that product over the last sort of few years, reassuringly expensive. Whereas a lot of people, if they did a taste test of maybe Stella or Foster's or, cheaper beer, probably wouldn't really notice a lot of difference. But people may buy Stella because they feel, it's got that aura of being better in some way, shape or form.
Well, I can't drink it, Ron. It makes me very sick.
I'm not a big fan either, but there's obviously some people out there who like it.
Yeah.
I guess the equivalent in our industry probably would be Harley Street, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
People would kind of maybe gravitate towards Harley Street and somebody who's operating from there because they feel it's the best.
Yeah.
And again, you and I know that's probably not always the case. I think there are some very good practitioners in Harley Street, but there are also some people as well, that hire rooms and you can do for £40 an hour, hire a reception and just operate under that name because they feel that that address, because they feel that more people will gravitate towards that. And there's no doubt when we look at the consulting room, when we look at search results, central London always comes out highest out of all London areas. And so I think that there's certainly plenty of evidence to support that that is a relevant, I think, marketing tool perhaps, to have a Harley Street address.
Yeah, I would agree. So for anyone, so for obviously for most of our listeners aren't going to have a Harley Street, you know, address, going to be more sort of locally based. You know, something we did was we rang around and just sort of assessed, you know, how much our competitors were charging. Is that something you'd recommend?
Absolutely, that's a great idea. And then you've got an idea about, well, the process that other people are going to go through. And if you're going to be more expensive than your local competitor, then what you need to do is to give people a reason why they should come to you rather than someone else. And again, remember that most people do not buy on price alone. And I think especially in a service-based industry as well, where, you know, people are looking for results, they're looking to improve the way that they look, and they need to be confident that that person knows and understands what they're doing. And I think there are some people that, you know, will be looking more at those service elements and those points of differentiation. The problem is that I think most people, when they're buying cosmetic treatments, don't know what to ask.
No.
And so the first thing that they ask is kind of, how much does it cost? Because it's the first thing they can really get a handle on to compare clinics. And then it's very much down to that individual clinic to communicate the value that they give that's linked to that price.
Absolutely. There are some fairly sort of disingenuous people. I've seen Botox advertised, you know, from £50.
Yes. And, you know, one of those things is that I would look at as well as, you know, sometimes you pay for what you get. And I think there is, we've heard of some practitioners in the past who would, you know, water the botulinum toxin down.
Mm.
So not give what I would say is a full and adequate treatment in order to get a good result that's going to last 3 to 4 months initially. So people then end up coming back 6 weeks, two months later, and then maybe having to have another treatment where they pay full price.
Yeah, I've heard, Ron, you know, about sort of rumours, it may be rumours about people using that cheap Chinese import, you know, called Chotox. And there was that case in America where the plastic surgeon used the vet Botox, reputedly, on himself and a couple, and all of them ended up on ITU being ventilated for 4 months. Are these rumours true?
Well, that was certainly true, and the doctor was prosecuted who did it in the States. We did a report in the consulting room to look at not just issues of different brands that you could buy. And, of course, now people can buy a version of botulinum toxin on the internet to self-administer, which is crazy. So that's kind of one aspect of the market. The other aspect is counterfeit products. And we've certainly seen evidence as well of products that people buy maybe over the internet and feel that they are the original brand, but they're not. So in other words, they you don't know what they contain, but they've just been labeled to look like the original brand, like Restylane or Tearcel, for instance.
So only really, I mean, we do urge people, only buy from reputable, pharmacies, which is sort of Wigmore, you know,
Absolutely.
Help Healthcare. Any other ones? Could you just sort of...
Well, I would say Wigmore, Health Exchange, MedFX are three companies that I know personally, and I know that, you know, operate in the correct way in terms of having direct accounts with the suppliers in the UK. The other route, of course, is to buy direct from a supplier. You know for sure then that you're going to get the right product.
Yeah,
so I think if you buy on the internet through unapproved sources because you feel it's going to be cheaper, you can't guarantee that product is going to be the product that you think. And also some of the associated storage conditions or shelf life issues can be something that you know, may not be adhered to as well.
Okay, so I think that's really good advice. So anyone, sort of, they ring around, say you ring around five competitors, and, you know, the most expensive is three. It'll be interesting, I think, to find out whether they give you a clear answer, you know, for three area Botox, how much it's going to be. So say someone's 400 and someone's 200. Where would you tend to price yourself, do you think?
Well, I think what you've got to do is to look at your business model, for a start, because remember, price is one component of a business which then relates to turnover. That's the income that you're going to get, or sales. The other aspect is how much it costs to run that business, and what you're left with when you take away your sales from your costs is your margin or your profit. And of course, different business models have different costs. If you're running a full service medical aesthetic clinic with a receptionist and several staff, and you're CQC registered, and you've spent a lot on the building and marketing, then your costs are going to be higher than somebody who might be operating a business model where they're going and using other people's businesses. So in other words, they're going around with a car and a bag and going in beauty salons. With that model, you can probably be keener on price and still know that you're going to make as much money, potentially, as somebody who's charging maybe £100 more.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think you've got to kind of look at it from that perspective as well. And it may be that if you're operating that model, it may be that you can't add as many bells and whistles onto your service as a full service medical aesthetic clinic that might have imaging systems they take people through as well, and all sorts of other bits and pieces that they can add in or bundle in.
Yes.
So ultimately, you've got to look at what type of business you're going to operate. The other thing is the area as well. If you're in a more affluent area from a geographical perspective, it's likely that you'll want to be charging more premium prices. If you're in an area where you've got a lot of unemployment and generally low income levels, then charging premium prices in an area may be difficult.
Yeah.
So I think all of these things have to be kind of thrown into the mix, really. But ultimately, what you want to do is to charge the maximum price that you think you can do in your area for the people that you think are going to be buying your service.
Okay, so what do you, overall, I mean, I take that on board, what do you think the average price of a standard three area Botox in the UK would be?
Well, from our research, we think it's £204. Yeah, £204 for one area, and then there's generally a £30 additional charge on average we've seen as well if a man's going to be treated.
So £204 for three area Botox?
Oh, sorry, it's not three. No, sorry, for three areas, it's £339.
£339. Okay.
Yeah, so and there's an additional £35 if a man is treated. So in other words, people do recognise that you're going to be using more material generally with men.
Okay, so that's rather higher than I imagined it would be, so that's good.
Yeah, I think when you strip out the, I think, still relatively small number of people that might be visible from a point of view of advertising in £99 Botox, and in fact there are one or two big companies that have done that as well, like Skin and Transform in the past. I've just done some research now, and they're not currently doing that. Skin are currently doing three areas for the price of two,
yeah.
But they've ditched the sort of the £99 Botox sort of advertisement. But the vast majority, I would say, of individual medical aesthetic clinics are charging somewhere around that £200 an area and then £339 for three areas.
Okay. And obviously the amount of Botox in the areas is different. I mean, you use obviously less for the outer eye area, slightly more for the glabella, and sort of middle amount for the frontalis.
That's correct.
Okay, so dermal fillers, how are people pricing those?
Well, it can be difficult to get hold of visible pricing for fillers because it's obviously a little bit more complicated. And that really relates to the filler that you're using for a start, what you're filling.
Yeah.
So in other words, whether you're looking at a nasolabial line or lip enhancement or volumization of a face, where obviously you're going to be using a different type of filler and probably more of it as well. So I think it's much more difficult for people to get a handle on comparing prices.
Yeah.
In general, people will give prices maybe, say, for instance, for some a product like Restylane or Juvederm of maybe around £300 for one syringe, say £500 for two and £600 for three syringes. So there'll be a progressive discount for more syringes used.
Because the idea of that, I suppose, is that you only spend a little bit longer in the consultation to use that extra syringe.
Yes. You take into account the syringe may cost, say, £75 or something like that, and to put in, an additional two syringes may take an extra 5-10 minutes, depending on how good you are and what you're treating.
I think
the other thing that it's important when people are looking at this as well is to look at the skill of the practitioner as well. So where, say for instance, if somebody's charging £200 for one syringe and somebody else is charging £300 for one syringe, A skilled practitioner may get away with one syringe, whereas an unskilled practitioner may actually waste a lot of the product, put it too deep, and need two syringes in order to correctly, you know, fill a line, for instance.
Yeah, because this is a sort of clinical issue. I mean, the dermal fillers are obviously placed slightly below the dermis, and it's a sort of double-edged sword. The more superficial you put it, the more change you'll get for your one mil syringe. But the possible complication rate in inexperienced hands is higher the more superficial you put it.
That's right. So I think it is a lot more difficult for people to compare the filler side of things because of these. I mean, Radiesse, Juvederm, Tearcile. Then you've got the different versions of those as well. You're looking at Restylane Vitel or Perlane, for instance. And so it's a lot more confusing, I think, for a consumer to look at buying these types of treatments.
And is Juvederm, I mean, the main two that I suppose in the market are probably the Juvederm range and the Restylane range. You know, obviously Juvederm is slightly cheaper, isn't it?
It depends on where you buy it from. I've heard all sorts of different prices, and I think that Allergan as well are prepared for volume users as well to do package prices with toxins and filler.
Yeah.
So I would say that this, on average, there's probably not a massive difference between Restylane and the equivalent Juvederm product if you're getting it from a third-party distributor.
Okay. So if we sort of say, how much did you say for one syringe, Ron?
About 300.
Okay, and your product costs are going to be, how much is the syringe going to cost?
It does depend on the individual product, but let's say on average, I don't know, £75, something like that.
Okay, and then you've got to factor obviously your time and obviously the clinic, all the costs, insurance, courses, all that sort of thing.
That's correct.
So your profit margin, perhaps you should aim, after all costs, should be in the region of...
The profit margin, I think, for fillers, especially if you're doing two or three, is probably better than Botox.
Yeah.
To some extent in the current marketplace.
And overall, I mean, in most clinics, are they doing more Botox or fillers?
Originally, if you looked 10 years ago, it would have been Botox, definitely. Yeah. I think now fillers have definitely become a lot more popular, as I think, for two reasons. Number one, people are more aware of fillers and what they can do.
Yeah.
And so the concept of total facial contouring has really evolved over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, where instead of just using fillers to augment lips and maybe fill out some lines, you're looking at reshaping faces.
Yes.
And that is still, you know, probably a relatively new concept, certainly compared to using a toxin for reduction of glabella lines or crow's feet. And so fillers are becoming a bigger and bigger component of, I think, a practitioner's turnover. And my prediction is that they may eventually, you know, sort of overtake the toxin sales.
That's interesting sort of shift in the people's sort of demographics. Now, I know, Ron, you've got strong feelings about offers. Tell me about that.
Well, I think people tend not to be that creative with offers and tend to go for probably what I would consider to be the easiest thing. So, in other words, giving a 20% discount. And I think if you do that, especially off the front page of your website, potentially you're bringing in people who are more price conscious. And I think people who are more price conscious tend to be potentially less loyal. And really what you're looking at, obviously, is to bring in people who understand what you do, understand what you're trying to do to help them, and understand that this is something that you're going to need to repeat in order to maintain and augment the results. And I think if you bring in people who are looking really for a deal, they're not necessarily the people who are going to be as loyal to you as people who are looking more for service and results.
Yeah.
And really, if you're trying to build that repeat business model where people are coming, you're bringing them in, you're giving them good service, and then those people are then coming back next year and the year after and the year after, and so all you're doing is adding and compounding to your database, that's the idea. Also, one good thing to do is to actually just look at the figures and work out what happens if you do a 20% discount that's visible to all of your clients. versus, say, a 10% price increase. And this is something that I would always recommend that people increase their prices every year. Now, a lot of people are afraid of doing that, especially in the current environment, and think they're going to lose lots of patients. In reality, you don't if you've got the service elements right and you provide good results. So if you look at the figures and you look at the average number of people you might treat with Botox and say, okay, I'm going to do a 20% discount on my price and work out that, say, I'm going to get 20% more customers.
Yeah.
And you look at the opposite of that and say, okay, instead I'm going to put a 10% increase on my price of Botox, but maybe I'm going to lose 10% of my customers.
Yeah.
When you work out the figures, and it's a good idea to do this in a spreadsheet, you work out that actually you're better off increasing your prices by 10% and losing 10% of your customers from a profit perspective than you are by decreasing your prices by 20% and increasing the number of people that come through by 20%.
That's interesting. I never really thought of it like that, but perhaps we'll do that study.
It's a very good idea, because at the end of the day, all of this is about numbers if you're looking at business and profit. And it's important to understand the effects that you have on the numbers, on the profit, really, that you're looking at the end of the day, and what an impact that 20% discount has. Because if you think about it, you're actually going to be 20% busier. You're going to have to, you're going to have to work harder for less money.
Yes.
Than you would do by working less hard if you have 10% fewer customers, but you actually make more profit.
Yeah, well, listening to you, I think I'm going to remove that offer we've got at the moment. So, I mean, you do see some clinics like shops, who have permanent sale.
What would they do? And, it's not to say that it's not necessarily valid, but it's not, and that you can't make money that way, but it's probably not often the smart way. You end up working harder and harder in order to achieve the same amount of profit, which isn't the aim of the game, I don't think, for most people.
No, I absolutely agree. Well, thanks, Ron, for joining us today. I know we're going to be doing another episode in a couple of weeks, and you've got some exciting news, well, exciting for some people, I suppose, about nurse prescribing and the latest on that. So that's a sort of interesting and developing area. So any sort of, just a little bit to tell us what we might hear in a couple of weeks?
Yes, it's really relating to the issue of nurses who, or any practitioner who doesn't have prescribing status themselves, and looking at what's happening within the marketplace in terms of what is and isn't reportedly good practice. And I think many nurses and other practitioners who have been operating under remote prescribing kind of guidelines, that may not be a relevant tool to use in the future from a business perspective. So it could be that there are certain business models that have been running for the last, some of them have been running for over 15 years within the market, that may be much more difficult to run over the next 6 months to a year.
Very interesting. Well, I look forward to hearing your thoughts on that in a couple of weeks. So thank you, Ron, for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
So thank you to Ron for his thoughts on pricing and the other issues he talked about today. As I mentioned, the aim of this podcast is to give you the latest information from the cosmetic industry in the United Kingdom. So we're going to be going roughly once a week with a new episode, and we're going to be concentrating perhaps in the next episode on training, where we recommend that you go to get ongoing training, because that's really important, that you keep your skills up to date. We're also going to be talking a little bit about the changes to nurse prescribing that are coming in, and there are some worries that nurses who are seeing patients and treating them with Botox without them seeing a doctor could in fact be struck off due to the new rulings by the Nursing Council. So we'll update you on that in subsequent episodes. So you'll be able to see all the back episodes on our website or on iTunes, and you'll be able to listen to those at any time. If you'd like to be directly notified if we publicise another podcast. All you need to do is subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, and then every time you plug your iPod in or your iPhone in, it will automatically upload the new episode for you to listen to. So you'll be able to do that on iTunes. If you just go to iTunes and look for the Cosmetic Course podcast. As always, we'd love to receive any of your feedback on any of the podcasts, anything you'd like us to talk about, any comments, be they positive or negative. So again, thank you very much for joining myself and Ron today, and we hope you've enjoyed the podcast, and we look forward to sharing our thoughts on the cosmetic industry in the United Kingdom with you next time.